Away, but I'm much more concerned, as I think we all should be. I mean, you might have your opinion, whether you think guns are good or bad. I don't particularly think they're good, but I understand why people have the right to have them. But the bigger question is, to me, is why do we have so much violence? What's the origin? Why do people want to just senselessly kill people? And usually it's young males. Not always, but usually, certainly in the school shootings. And that's what we're going to talk about today with Dr. Kathy Seifert. She's a wonderful guest. I've had her on before. You might have seen her on CNN. She has written a few books, and she's got a new book out, which we're going to talk about, Youth Violence. And we're going to talk today about not just school shootings, but about shootings in general and what we can do at the real base level about fixing this before it happens. And I want to welcome Dr. Kathy Seifert to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
I am great, Shannon. Thanks for having me back.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. You really write terrific books, and you are such the expert on violence and kids and guns and, well, just violence in general, whether it be guns or whatever. And the main question I always want to ask is what is the origin of this? I mean, why is there so much, and it seems so much now, violence in youth? Do we hear more about it? Is there more violence? And what is, I mean, I know there's a lot of factors, but is there any one particular key factor?
Well, particularly in the United States, we do have a huge problem with violence. And so the CDC says that youth violence is a public health crisis in the United States. And we do have more youth violence than other industrialized nations. Our rate is about 6 youth per 100,000, where in France and Germany, they have less than 1 per 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And places like Russia have 18 per 100,000. And Colombia, South America, has 84. So we're not as bad as that, but we're not as good as some of the European countries.
Okay.
We do have a problem.
We do have a problem. As you say, youth violence is the second leading cause of death for young people from ages 10 to 24. This is preventable. This, we have to find the origins here of why this happens. Obviously, it's a cry for help. It's anger. It's lashing out somehow. Do you think, which we hear about constantly, do you think that violent video games and our violent media is to blame?
Everything becomes a piece of the picture, mm-hmm. but no one thing really is enough to have a person become violent. What it is when multiple problems come together at the same time, creating what I call a perfect storm. And so while violent media is in there, violent media is really more of a problem for people who are vulnerable to violence anyhow than it is to your average person.
And what would make someone vulnerable to violence?
Primarily, the main factors are, and again, no particular one, but the factors coming together, and that is children who have been abused, neglected, or exposed to domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
People who have severe untreated mental illness and substance abuse coming together. People who have poor skills to cope with anger, everyday problems, and so they have difficulty coping with things. Poverty is a factor. Living in communities that are disorganized, easy access of guns and drug availability in the community. And if you live in a community where adults are involved in crime, you're more likely to be violent. And if you're exposed to violence in any way, you are more likely to be violent.
Okay, so it could be some of those factors. Certainly, the school shooting in Connecticut a few weeks ago, he certainly did not come from poverty. So it doesn't have to be all of those factors.
It's not all of those, but the more of them you have, the more likely it is to be a problem.
Is this something new? Is this something that our society is seeing as a way to fix problems for kids to act out? I mean, years ago, 100 years ago, on every farm, everybody had a gun. And media wasn't the same, but I still don't think that kids went out and shot schools and movie theaters and, you know, random shootings like this. So I think that it is something we're seeing new, that it's a way to, I think often, it's a way to get seen. It's a way to get attention. And bad attention is better than no attention at all. Is there a caveat in there that says I get to be famous if I do this?
Yes, absolutely. That is a factor. But here's the interesting thing. We had, in the past, we had a spike in youth crime and youth violence, and it actually has come down, and so it's less of a problem than it used to be, but it's still more of a problem than it is in other countries.
And why do you think that is? Why so not other countries? I mean, certainly they have guns, they have the same media. I mean, what is it here that makes us more violent?
You know, I'm going to hazard a couple of guesses that may not make people very happy, but in our country, more than any other country in the world, we tend to be independent thinkers, do things on our own, be independent, which is wonderful. But one of the things that we try not to interfere with is how people raise their children.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have people who are drug addicts, criminal, whatever, have multiple problems, raising children the way they see fit, and they're raising them in a violent and criminal atmosphere, and we don't interfere with that because we think people should raise the children the way they see fit. I think that's a problem, and I don't know how to fix it.
Well, the schools could fix it, and I know that you said in your first book, How Children Become Violent, that teachers are the first line of defense, because when kids go to school, the teachers, certainly when they're in elementary school, see if they have a, you know, they see a little bit into their family life, they see their anger issues before they've become really a problem. So do you think that this is something we should do, is intervene at an early age?
Absolutely, and I think that is the key. I think early intervention, prevention, making sure that children are safe, that they have the skills they need to deal with the world, and if they're mentally ill or have emotional problems, that they have access to mental health services. And I strongly believe in school-based mental health services universally.
Mm-hmm. But, of course, that always comes down to the same thing. That comes down to money. I mean, schools are already have a lot of issues on their plate, certainly with budgets. And so, I mean, a lot of people would be saying we can't do everything, and maybe we should intervene somehow in family affairs, which is really hard to do. So it is, I see what you say, when you say that, what do we do about it? I mean, you might have an answer there to get them while they're young, but how do you get into that family atmosphere?
Right, and just to comment on school-based mental health, I have school-based mental health programs in my organization, and I say school-based mental health can be done. You need to have a little initial money, but in the long run, it saves so much money that it can be really a cost saver instead of a cost spender.
So in your organization, you actually set this up in schools?
Yes.
Okay, and so it can be, how can it be a cost saver?
Well, what you do, basically, all communities have community mental health clinics, and they usually operate in an office in the community.
Uh-huh.
So if you take those therapists and go make a deal with the schools and say, look, if you give me space, I will put a therapist in every, which is what I did, I'll put a therapist in every school in your county. And you know, it takes time to make that happen and problem solving and all that, but that's what we did. The school gave us space. I put the clinic in the school. We build just the same as we do in the community clinic. We bring the parents into the school, and the rate of children showing up for appointments is three times what it is in the school than it is in the community.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. All right. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that and the different schools can make. And we're going to talk about some of the real-life cases from Virginia.
WTBQ.
Hello and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us here today. And don't go anywhere, because we are talking about violence. We are talking about youth violence. We are talking about guns. But guns are just the tool. But the problem is violence in our youth. The problem is, where does it come from? Why do kids want to kill other people? That's a huge problem, and we need to nip it in the bud so we don't have this issue. We are talking with Dr. Kathy Seaford, who is a forensic psychologist. She has written a few books on this. She is certainly an expert on this. Her new book, Youth and Violence, is now out. And her other book, which was terrific, How Children Become Violent, all about violence and how to deal with it before it happens. I mean, certainly, Dr. Kathy, you are an expert on this. You study this. You understand youth violence. You understand that certainly we have a problem here in this country. And when you look at the case studies, which you have done for your new book, for some of these like the Virginia Tech and Columbine, what's the main thing? I mean, Columbine kids were not poor kids. They did not come from a troubled background, most of them. What was the, what's the major theme through this that, I mean, you know, we talked earlier about you being able to go into schools with your business and getting psychologists in there, and that's certainly the first line of defense. But can it escape a young kid? I mean, the Columbine kids, from what I understand, weren't troubled kids. What happened when they became teenagers, and where does that come from?
Well, actually, when you're talking about Columbine, both of those kids got in trouble with the law. It was a fairly minor incident that had to do with destroying property, I think. And so they sailed through their probation without any problems. But, and I know hindsight is better than foresight, but when mental health professionals look back on the writings, and they were on YouTube with information as well, and when we look back on that, we think probably one of them was psychotic and the other one was psychopathic, and that's a pattern we see repeated over and over again. There are two paths to violence, especially in the late adolescence, early adulthood. There are two groups. Mm-hmm. One is psychopathic, which means severely criminal, and the other is psychotic. And in Columbine, you had the combination of the two, which was really bad news. So the problem is, they were probably showing signs of their disorders in high school, but if you don't have mental health people in the school to recognize it, you don't have any way to refer them to services, because teachers are not trained to recognize mental illness.
No, teachers are trained to kind of kick them out of the classroom. I mean, teachers are, you know, if they're disruptive, they're going to be gone. They're certainly not going to get helped. But why does this turn out into, because I really do think that, you know, that we talk about this, we see it constantly. Why does it turn out into, or why does it display itself into killing, where I don't think it did 50 years ago? Is it cool to kill?
You know, in our culture, it is cool to kill, but here's the problem. For most kids that are not going to go out and kill, they can understand the difference between fantasy and reality. And when you have someone who's either psychotic or psychopathic, the line between fantasy and reality becomes blurred.
Yeah.
And then that's why violent video games and a constant use of violent video games becomes a problem for those folks, because they get blurred between what's real and what's not real. And if they are, my new book that I'm working on now is Detached, if they are detached from humanity because of their illness or their psychopathy, they can hurt people and not think twice about it.
I see. So essentially, you know, most kids don't do this. Certainly this does not happen from, you know, if it's one in a million, that's even a lot. But that one in a million certainly can do a lot of damage. That said, I mean, it's just the kids that are already troubled that are going to do this because they're acting out what they see, and they don't have any good peers around them or any good family structure or school structure. So I can see what you're saying. If you get into the schools and get them early and somebody can recognize this, they can stop it before it becomes a problem.
Right. Exactly. And so whatever problems, usually these kids have multiple problems and few what we call resiliency factors, things that make it possible for them to fight their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so if at the school level we can give them more resiliency and help them solve problems, they're not going to get to the point where they explode.
Right, which is exactly what happens. They get to the point where they explode because, I think, because they're not, I mean, in a very simplistic way, they're not getting the attention they need. If they do this, they certainly get the attention they need. And I'm sure that's, and you're the expert here, I'm sure that's very buried somehow deep in their psyche. But, you know, they have learned that the only time they get attention is when they do something wrong, right?
Absolutely. And they get lots of attention, and they get what they want when they behave badly. So if we reinforce, if the school, the parents, the community reinforce doing the right thing, then you can send them on a different path. Instead of getting attention from doing the wrong thing, get attention for doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the key there. Send them on a different path. So if you get it in time, that path is not going to be one of destruction. That path can be something else. And is that true? I mean, can you change someone that's bent this way a little bit? Can you change them if you catch them at the right time?
Absolutely. And I've done it time and time again, and it absolutely can be done.
Mm-hmm. But again, it's trained professionals have to get in there, and somebody's got to pay attention. Somebody's got to know what to look for. And we can't rely on teachers always to do that. And as you said, we can't always rely on parents, because if they're coming from a dysfunctional household, no one's going to really see it there.
No, and it takes a trained eye to see what it is and kind of sort out what needs to happen first, second, third. And so we try to make parents our partners and help sorting it out. But the reality is, if they're coming from a home where the parents are substance abusers or criminal, the parents have to clean up their act mm-hmm. before they can expect the children to clean up theirs.
Could you give us some, listeners, maybe they work in schools, could you give us some, you know, what would somebody look for just very basically? I mean, are there key things to look for in a child, and at what age is it most obvious?
Well, the reality is that the younger you see serious problems,
mm-hmm.
The greater the chance that this is something that's going to be really, really serious later on. So, for instance, children developmentally should be nonviolent by the time they enter school, developmentally. So if you see an aggressive child in the first grade, it is highly, highly likely that he has very, very serious problems, and it needs to be addressed right then and there. So children that are getting in trouble throughout their school years for hitting people, getting into fights, being defiant of the teacher, those kinds of things, which in the past we would have handled, or schools would have handled, by
punishment of some sort.
Yeah, by, I can't think of the word, by suspending them.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of suspending them, they need to go straight to mental health services.
Okay.
That is where we can make the difference.
All right. And at what age, well, you said first grade. I mean, up till what age? I mean, do we have, you know, if we see violence in kids or certain things, I mean, when by the time they get into high school, is it too late to change them?
It is not too late, but the longer you wait, the harder it is.
Mm-hmm.
What we have found is once people are adults, it's very, very, very difficult to change them. And so the younger,
the better.
Better luck you have.
Well, and this is what we're talking about, too, because this is what we see, young males who act out. Why do they often kill themselves? I mean, if they're looking for attention, death is not a great reward. So, and there is some point of obviously looking for attention. You know, somebody needs to hear me. I'm going to do something really awful, and everybody's going to pay attention. Why do they kill themselves? Or do they, basically, they obviously know they've done something so wrong?
They do, and I think that's where we don't know enough, but I think homicidality and suicidality are often linked. So you have somebody who has depression in the first place, and so I think that is the key underlying factor is depression that's not treated, and then it just gets worse and worse, and then they have problems in school, they have problems with their parents, they have problems with their peers, and they get more and more depressed and angry. And if you have peer rejection with that combination of difficulties, you're going to have a kid who's really, really, really angry.
Okay, so that's a real problem. If it gets to that point where they get to that age where they're getting peer rejection, they're going to be angry and it's going to be lashed out without thinking. We unfortunately have to wrap it up for today, but Dr. Kathy Seifert, I thank you so much for joining us. You can go to her website, which you can get on Shannon's Corner online, and there's a direct link to you there, and you can sign up for her newsletter and get her book, Stop the Cycle, is the monthly newsletter. Dr. Seifert, thank you so much again for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here today, and as I said, we have to wrap it up. Go on shannonscorner.com. For more information. And until next time, don't forget to make good choices.